Welcome to On the Couch, a podcast from Reaction with me, Lucy Beresford, broadcaster and psychotherapist, taking a deep dive into the relationships making the headlines in politics today and exploring the psychology and personalities in political life. We human beings, we make sense of the world by the stories, the narratives that we tell ourselves and about each other. And this week has seen Boris Johnson grilled at the COVID inquiry, his chance, he might hope, to attempt to shape the narrative about his time as Prime Minister during the pandemic. But will people's minds be changed? Will anything he say move the dial? And does it really matter anyway, when what we really want to work out, what not to do, is how to cope with a pandemic the next time it comes around? So to help me unpick the narratives on this, I couldn't think of anybody better than the journalist and a woman who was the editor of a national newspaper for 15 years, Dawn Neeson. Hello, Dawn.
Hi, Lucy.
You are used to the narratives that people tell each other. You're used to the stories that get put out there, and you're used to puncturing, I should say, those stories. I wonder what you made of Boris's behaviour at the inquiry today and yesterday. What does it tell us about what he's trying to do with this particular narrative, do you think?
I think... it doesn't tell us anything we didn't already know about Boris Johnson. I mean, I've sat before one of these inquiries with the Leveson inquiry back in 2012, where newspapers were being investigated for law breaking and phone hacking like that and unethical procedures. And the one thing I will say, Lucy, being on trial for doing your job is one of the most horrible things you can go through. It really, really is unpleasant. So on a human level, I do feel for people sitting before that inquiry. Now, obviously, nowhere near as much as I feel for the people that lost loved ones and went through the horrors of the pandemic inflicted on us by basically a bunch of hypocrites who are breaking their own rules. But the whole inquiry thing, we are sitting there for hours on end, is hard going. So on a human level, it's not fun, just to get that out there. Obviously, the pandemic was awful. But the inquiry. Now, the point of this inquiry, Lucy, I think for anyone, any sane thinking person, is to find out how we handle the next pandemic, because there will be one. When it will be is another matter. We know we haven't had one since the early 1900s with the Spanish flu. But there will be another pandemic. The point of this inquiry, in my mind, is to find out what went wrong and what we can do to make it better for everybody for any future pandemics we have. What I'm not getting from this, Lucy, is that. All I'm getting from this is a bunch of grown men, because it is mainly men, acting like schoolboys and pointing fingers at one another and saying, or playing the blame game. That's what they're doing. I sat and listened to 6 hours, I think it was, of Matt Hancock, who was the health secretary at the time. So in theory, he should have been knowing what he was doing. But I listened to 6 hours of his testimony, and all I heard, Lucy, was, well, I don't like Dominic Cummings. He wasn't a very nice person. I'm not interested in how you feel personally about Dominic Cummings. I think most group people will agree he's not a particularly nice person. But I wanted to hear from you the mistakes you made as health secretary and how we take that forward. And I'm not hearing that. The same applies to what I think we're hearing from Boris Johnson now. To start off with an apology, but then within the next literally half an hour, when he was asked, what are you apologising for? He said, well, I'm not really sure. So, Lucy, how do you apologise when you don't even know what you're apologising for? The point of...
Well, the English language is quite tricky, isn't it, around that? Because you can say, it's a bit like, you know, couples... maybe where, you know, infidelity is discovered and the poor hapless person says, well, I'm sorry I'm now having to sleep in the spare room. You know, when you say sorry, what do you actually mean? Is it actually an apology that, or a regret that you got caught out and that you're in this situation? Or is it actually genuine contrition? So you didn't really feel that there was very much contrition from Boris.
No, I didn't. I felt it was poor little me. I felt Boris was sorry, and Matt Hancock before him was sorry that they were in this position now, and it's like almost that they got caught out, because I think that is what has happened. I must confess, I haven't listened to what Boris has had to say this afternoon. I believe he was talking about Partygate. But you're right about an apology, and I think all too often in public life now, Lucy, we demand an apology, whether it's a politician or a journalist online or a broadcasting company or anyone even remotely in the, or, you know, a TV personality, anyone remotely in the public eye. We demand an apology. And it's like, you can demand all the apologies you want. It doesn't actually matter. If the person doing the apologising is doing it because they've been demanded of them, but they don't mean it, it's not an apology. It's just a word. It's an empty, pointless
word. And that's
why
I really worry for the victims who have been standing for quite some time outside the location of the inquiry, where they have been holding banners up, photos of loved ones who've died. They believe that this apology from, whether it's Boris or from the government or whoever, that actually this will help them in their grief. But at the moment, they're very stuck in that, you know, people say there are five stages of grief, and many people are stuck in the anger stage of grief. And I wonder whether they need to hate Boris. They need to hate the government because it helps them in their grief.
I think you do. Well, you obviously understand grief so much better than I do and the stages you go through. But I think with this, I mean, so many people feel incredibly angry with what happened during the pandemic and with the lockdowns and with the appalling way people were treated in this country. So I think anger is it in a way almost a positive thing. You have to feel angry about something, and you are at least feeling angry with the people that were responsible for the situation. Look, Boris Johnson didn't kill anyone, okay? Matt Hancock did not kill anyone. The virus killed people. And I'm also very aware, Lucy, of the rhetoric we use around our politicians at the moment, because obviously we think of Joe Cox, we think of Sir Dennis Amos in Southend, two politicians who were murdered. And I do think the rhetoric we use around talking about our politicians words can be dangerous. But I think feeling angry about a government that let you down is surely a way of actually dealing with the huge emotion of grief. And I do think, I mean, obviously everyone has their different views about how things were handled during the pandemic. But I still feel angry. I feel angry for women like my mum's next door neighbour, who is in her 80s and developed severe agoraphobia because she was told to stay home or she was going to die. She's now too scared to leave her home. Yeah. I mean, what way is that to, you know, end your days? I feel sorry and angry on behalf of the thousands of children who have had their education and their mental health absolutely wrecked in many cases. Sorry and angry for the children that lost their lives because they were locked up with abusers. I feel very angry. I, touch wood, didn't lose anyone that close to me, but I did lose a friend of a friend, an acquaintance, who took his own life because his business failed. His business failed, his marriage failed. And he took his own life. Now, I'm not blaming the government for that, because, I mean, that situation might have happened in any case for all sorts of reasons. People feel like that and behave like that. And that was, I think it was a straw that broke the cover. But yes, I feel angry. I feel angry for those people standing outside this inquiry. I feel angry for the people having to watch Boris Johnson ruffle his hair up and sit there and blather on, using so many words, Lucy, but never actually really saying anything. And I don't believe they feel sorry. I think they feel sorry for themselves.
And there's interesting, you talk about that wall of words and this idea that there is a, again, there is a narrative that's being spun. So, yes, we had Boris saying yesterday that he wished in a way that there had been more women around. I mean, you've worked in an extremely macho culture. So I'd love to know what your experience of that was and whether you think actually the whole, certainly that first lockdown, would it have been different if there had been more women in Downing Street talking about how are our kids going to get educated? Who's going to be doing this working from home and homeschooling at the same time and juggling bath time and all of that kind of stuff? But at the same time today, there's also been talk about Dominic Cummings going to Barnard Castle and Partygate. And Boris has actually said that the version of events that entered the public consciousness about what was meant to have happened in Downing Street is a million miles from the reality of what actually happened. So how have we got to the point where people are having to tell stories to themselves about their behaviour in order almost to exonerate themselves? How important do you think it is for Boris that he believes that his version of events differs so wildly from that's entered the public consciousness?
I think two things here. I think when you talk about the amount of women that were around, and you know, we have had high powerful women. We've had female prime ministers, obviously, several a week at the moment where we're going. I think Boris's problem is he's always had too many women around. Most of the ones he's not married to at the time. So I think Boris is one of those men who is incredibly thick-skinned, and I think he does believe his version of events. I do think he is struggling with the fact that people are angry with him. I think he's struggling with the people that people don't like him. I think he struggles with that. I think Boris, in Boris's world, thinks he can do no wrong. I mean, I think he's confused by, A, having to sit in an inquiry. He hasn't articulated this, but I know that deep down, I'm sure he thinks that, well, I got the big calls right. I got the vaccines rolled out. You know, we got out of lockdown quicker than many European countries. Whether we should have been in lockdown as much or as long in the first place is a different discussion. But I think he is very confused by the fact that people are angry with him and feel let down by him. I don't think he gets it. I think he believes his own narrative. And if you look back at Boris's career as a journalist and as a politician, I mean, both, you could say, very, careers designed for people who are narcissists. And Boris ticks those boxes, he really does. So I think he doesn't understand what he's done wrong. Because in his world, he doesn't think he's done anything wrong. He thinks he was, you know, the great white hope who sort of like rode in to save us all. And the fact that it went horribly wrong. So there is an element of ego here as well.
And actually, you talking about the ego is really interesting, because we saw that earlier this year when Boris was in front of the Parliament Privileges Committee, the UK Parliament's Privileges Committee, and he described their findings ultimately as a kangaroo court. And I thought, from his demeanour at the very beginning of his appearance at the COVID inquiry, the fact that he pitched up 3 hours early, he'd obviously done lots of homework, he seemed very prepared. I thought he was maybe going to perform in a different way, but actually you've highlighted this almost impenetrable sense of, but I don't understand why people think I got things wrong, that actually that is the version that's going to support him going forward. He needs that narrative. We all need these narratives to survive in the world, and that's Boris's narrative.
I think he's incredibly, incredibly thick-skinned, and if you think, as you say, that the things he has been through in his public and his private life, And, you know, he's known as Teflon because nothing ever really sticks, does it? It's like, you know, he's been sacked from two jobs on newspapers. He has been, you know, caught demonstrably lying. You know, he's lied to his wives in the past. So I think he comes from that privileged background, Lucy, where, you know, you can do no wrong. You are right. And I think that is what he believes and will always believe, no matter what the outcome of this, the COVID inquiry is. And I personally have no great hopes for it whatsoever. I think it's going to go on for, it's scheduled to go on for 3 months. But if you think back to the Chilcot inquiry, that was like 7 years, wasn't it? It's costing millions of pounds. Mm-hmm. And all I'm learning is that the opinions I formed of the people running the country, and indeed the scientists as well, who were supposedly advising them, my opinion that I formed when it was all happening is pretty much my opinion now, and it's not very high of anyone, any of them, I must admit.
And that's so interesting, because the inquiry could have been an opportunity for that narrative to change, or for minds to be changed, one might say. And what I am very struck by, and faintly alarmed by, maybe even more than faintly alarmed, is that I can completely understand why we seem to be knee-deep in WhatsApp communication. And he said, they were bullying me, I was, you know, slagging this person off, and lots of expletives in the middle of that. Simply because human beings, you know, we're very interested in the dynamics between people. Mm. So whether it's about our family or our colleagues, you know, we often do. People are going to go at home for Christmas or Hanukkah or whatever, and they're all going to start nattering about each other's families and the members of their family. So you can understand why those WhatsApp messages were as gossipy or as I suppose brutal as they sometimes were. That was how a lot of people were letting off steam, I should imagine. But that's not what we want from the inquiry. What we want to work out is what not to do next time. Exactly, you know, should that. We, exactly. When we look at the scale of excess deaths, and we see that Sweden, which didn't lock down, has really low levels of excess deaths, we are going to look at that and think maybe we should have a different policy going forward. And this inquiry doesn't seem to be picking that up. And so therefore the psychology of this inquiry is very bizarre. It seems to be as much about the lawyers grandstanding as it is about the politicians and scientists.
Very much so. And going back to the Leveson inquiry I mentioned, which was the investigation into newspapers misbehaving during a very bad period of time. It is about the lawyers. They're making a fortune out of it, and it's our money, Lucy. It's taxpayers that are paying this. And nothing really was solved. Nothing really was solved during the Leveson inquiry. I don't think anything really will be solved during this inquiry. And the fact that it is taken so long, it's costing so much money, and it's not being done particularly well. The people asking the questions aren't asking the questions you or I would probably ask. And you've got countries like Sweden and even Italy, who are one of the worst affected countries during the pandemic, had inquiries within months, came out of it the other side, and had a plan of action. Now, by the time we get through this, I mean, obviously we're going to have a different government. Probably have a different government next week where we're going, but a different government. The people that are in charge of things then are going to walk away scot-free. They'll have nothing to do with it. It'll be different people running the country or trying to run the country. I feel incredibly frustrated, and as I said, I didn't actually lose a loved one. If I had lost, you know, my mum or any of the other elderly relatives that I had, I would be so angry. I really would. And, you know, I am angry. And the hypocrisy is what I think a lot of us who aren't obviously personally bereaved by how it was there, but it's the hypocrisy of the people setting those rules for us to follow, including Lucy telling us how to walk down the street, remember, footprints on pavements, and walk around a supermarket, were breaking every single one of the damn rules they were setting for us by cheating with their mistresses. We had, obviously, Matt Hancock infamously groping his mistress. We had one of the scientists, visiting his bit on the side during lockdown as well. They were breaking all the rules. If they were that terrified by this virus, Why were they breaking the rules they were setting for us?
So I guess on that final note, if that is what is coming up, what the end result of this inquiry, or maybe this particular week's interviews in the inquiry, will do is to reinforce people's anger towards the people who were in charge, which of course is the Conservative government. And as you say, it's an incredibly febrile week this week, with Robert Jenrick resigning last night and rumours of a potential leadership challenge. If not rumours, there were even rumours of a potential snap election before Rishi Sunak scotched that one, I guess. But what is going to be the impact, do you think, having watched politics for as long as you have, what do you think the impact of this inquiry is going to be on the narratives that people are going to tell each other about the government of today, as opposed to the government of the pandemic?
I think what happened during the pandemic with the Conservative government, and also we have to remember that Labour were in opposition, and they still are, she says, checking their watch, who knows. I think the politicians we have at the moment are gonna not be looked back on the right side of history on this one, both political parties. I think it will be carried with them, because everything the Conservative Party seemed to do wrong, Labour then seemed to double down on, about, you know, the mental health care during lockdowns, particularly with children, you know, shutting schools, which I was so, how can you do that to children? How can you do that to children? And Labour were saying, well, actually, we think we should have shut schools down longer. That, you know, there was no checks and balances in place for the incredibly vulnerable people in our society, those being the young and the, obviously the elderly in care homes. I mean, none of us will ever forget that. And I think this particular group of... There's a saying, isn't there, Lucy? It's like, you know, the politicians you get, you deserve. And I keep saying to myself, I have no idea what I did so wrong in a previous life that I've ended up with this bunch. And we have an election coming up. We have to have an election, obviously, in the next year, maybe in the spring, maybe in the autumn. Maybe in the following January, 2025, that's when they have to have it, isn't it? But I think most people in this country now, no matter what side of the political fence you thought you were on, are now going, I have absolutely no idea what party stands for what. And the fact that both parties are infighting like children in a playground, and they're both as divided, is just utterly, utterly depressing. So I think the pandemic and where we are now with two main parties divided, fighting within themselves, I'm naturally an optimist, Lucy, naturally, but I just think that it's politics at the moment is a mess. The only thing I'm grateful for is that our politics are a mess, but they're not as bad as America's politics at the moment.
Well, we'll get you back on next year to talk about that election, which we do know when that is. But for now, I am very grateful. Dawn Neeson, journalist and national newspaper editor for 15 years, giving her take on The Couch. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Lucy. Thank you.